This podcast is produced by the Center for Deployment Psychology at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences. The views expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. In addition, references to any specific companies, products, processes, or services does not necessarily constitute or imply endorsement by the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. Welcome to CDP's podcast, Practical for Your Practice,
where we give you actionable intel to support what you do, one colleague to another. Hello, everybody, and welcome to CDP's Practical for Your Practice. I'm Corinne Lefkowitz, happy to be here with you today and joined by my friend and co-host, Kevin Holloway. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing great, Corinne. I'm excited to be here.
Good. I'm excited, too, because we are talking about another topic that is close to my heart. And you know that usually when I say that, that means it's probably some sleep nerd related topic. That's what I like to.
Well, and I love to bask in the nerdiness of it. I know this isn't like my expert topic, but I like kind of being here and accompanying you while you get to bask in the sleep nerdiness. So,
and I think that by this point of having been on a couple of sleep related podcasts, you know enough.
That's true. I'm approaching nerd level, maybe.
You're an honorary sleep nerd.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's what you've always wanted.
It's true.
Today, I'm going to take the liberty of calling her a sleep nerd as well. We're joined by somebody who's very talented and very experienced in this field, Dr. Courtney Worley. Welcome, Courtney.
Welcome.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. As you can tell, I am really excited to talk about our topic today, which is going to be revolving around evidence-based treatments for nightmare disorders. But before we get started, perhaps you could take a moment to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about you.
Absolutely. In addition to the title of sleep nerd, I am Dr. Courtney Worley. I'm a double board certified in clinical and sleep psychology. I'm a clinician, author, and international trainer and consultant in evidence-based psychotherapies for PTSD, insomnia, and nightmares, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Okay, now you just brought me in. That's awesome.
I was about to say, it's possible she just out-nerded us.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, we are delighted to have you here with all of your expertise and experience talking to us about nightmare treatments. So I thought maybe we could even just start there, since not all listeners are necessarily familiar with what treatments are available for folks and what that looks like. Maybe give us a bit of a summary.
Absolutely. So I will say, even in behavioral sleep medicine communities, not everyone does nightmare treatment or is familiar. And that's one of the things that I've kind of taken up as a personal banner. I want people to know about evidence-based nightmare treatments. And so when we talk about evidence-based nightmare treatments, I'm primarily going to talk about psychotherapies, though in the clinical practice guidelines, there are some recommendations given around medications, but we know three evidence-based treatments for nightmares tend to be the gold standard, meaning they have the most research to support them. And those are imagery rehearsal therapy, or IRT, exposure relaxation and restriction therapy, or ERRT, or lucid dreaming therapy, which we don't tend to abbreviate, but you can.
I say that one's a little new to me, so I hope we hear a little bit more about that too. I guess maybe part of my question is, you mentioned part of your expertise are in trauma. So like what kind of nightmares are we talking about? Are we talking about kind of the everyday nightmares that any of us have from time to time? Are we talking about nightmares related to trauma, kind of re-experiencing nightmares? Are we talking about nightmares in other circumstances? What are we talking about treating here?
All of the above.
Okay.
So let's back it up just a minute.
Yeah.
So most people are familiar with dreams, and just about everybody, short of some severe brain damage or some really heavy medications, dreams. And just about everybody has had a nightmare. Like 85% of adults will say that they've had a nightmare in their past year. But for some people, those nightmares become more persistent and regular and disruptive. And that's where we might go on to diagnose nightmare disorder. But nightmares are what I like to call a transdiagnostic symptom, which means that they occur across a lot of different psychiatric disorders, a lot of different sleep disorders, and even in some neurocognitive disorders. So nightmares can show up in a lot of different ways. We can classify nightmares by their association with other sleep problems. So you may be familiar with narcolepsy related nightmares or nightmares that occur within REM sleep behavior disorder. A lot of people, and probably a lot of listeners here, will be familiar with trauma related nightmares, but we also can classify nightmares by their content. And so we have what's called idiopathic nightmares. And those are ones that we kind of don't really have a particular reason or cause for the content, but it's distressing and upsetting. On the other end, we have what are usually thought of as trauma-related nightmares that come from some kind of exposure, and those can be a part of PTSD as a diagnosis or independent of. And then in the middle, we have what we call intermediate or symbolic nightmares, and those often have some of the same themes, images, or emotions as trauma-related nightmares, but they may not be an exact replay, not replicative of the trauma.
It's such an interesting topic because much like sleep in general, sleep is something that everybody can relate to, obviously. Everybody sleeps, hopefully. But dreams are as well, even nightmares, right? Because we all, as you said, from time to time have a bad dream, have maybe have a nightmare, maybe you don't call it that. Maybe it's not trauma related, but certainly I can attest to when I'm stressed out about something, I am way more likely to have a miserable dream that wakes me up. So it feels like a topic that's very relatable.
You are
Unfortunately.
not alone in that. And so we know that stress is a trigger for nightmares, and nightmares, may happen for a couple of nights, and when that stressor comes down, they may resolve. There may also be fluctuations in nightmares for women in particular related to their menstrual cycle. And so we see differences across the menstrual cycle in nightmares. We also see variations in nightmares with other psychiatric conditions. And so in depression, we'll see increases oftentimes in distressing dreams and nightmares ahead of a relapse or an increase in depression symptoms. There was this really interesting study, I believe in 2024, by Joffrey that said that they looked at individuals who had been recently hospitalized for suicide and suicide attempt, and they backtracked and asked them to consider their dreams and nightmares. And they found that there were increases in bad dreams and nightmares as we got closer and closer to that hospitalization. And they actually started to have suicide themes in their dreams or nightmares close to those hospitalizations. And so I think
Interesting.
that's a really important piece as we think about our active duty and veteran population, is this connection with suicide risk. We actually authored a paper that just came out this year looking at some of those predictors of nightmares and their link to suicide risk in veterans, in a community sample, not in people seeking treatment. And so the experiences that people have in their dreams, in their nightmares, and in that disruption of sleep has impacts across their life and across their day, because sleep is a 24-hour thing, right? Everything that happens in that 24 hours can impact our sleep.
Right.
You bring up such a good point. Well, you sort of answered a question that I had in my mind, which is was going to be if dreams and nightmares are so common and we all experience them and they're kind of part of almost normal life and they're also associated with so many different diagnoses, why are they so important to treat? Why do we care? Why do we want to give them individual attention? And you at least already started to answer that question, which is noting that connection with suicide risk, and hospitalization. I bet there's more that you'd like to add to that.
There's so much more to talk about, but in the interest of keeping us brief today, I think that we can have nightmares that are part of other psychiatric conditions, and sometimes treating those will help to reduce the nightmares. But sometimes nightmare disorder kind of takes on a life of its own, and it is nightmare disorder, which is a distinct diagnosis. And so when we think about nightmare disorder, we think about disturbing dreams that have recalled content. And that's often an important distinguishing factor compared to other sleep problems or
Yeah.
other issues. They cause awakenings. And usually once that awakening happens, it's prolonged, right? People are awake because they're trying to deal with the physiological effects, and the content of what they just experienced. And then they cause distress and impairment, both upon awakening and throughout the next day. So we often think about kind of those four pieces when we're thinking about diagnosing a nightmare disorder. Because they're so common across other things, we don't want to double dip in our
Yeah.
diagnosis. And so we're making sure that we have enough symptoms left over to attribute to, if there's a second diagnosis.
Makes sense. I mean, kind of a similar question, and maybe it has a similar answer for me was, again, because these are so normal. I mean, nightmares in general are normal for a lot of us. At what point does it cross a line where it needs treatment, or where we kind of identify it as disordered or problematic for that person?
Yeah. Well, much like other diagnoses, we look at impairments in functioning and we look at distress. And so there is no specifier in DSM-5, there is no specifier in ICD-11 or even the International Classification of Sleep Disorders for frequency, which is really interesting. So we don't have a clear cutoff, but for most researchers and clinicians, we think about approaching treatment when it's happening weekly or more frequently. But certainly, if somebody is having less frequent nightmares and it's causing a lot of distress and impairment, we probably would still move forward with treatment as part of shared decision making if that's something that the individual really wanted. So we're looking at the impact on life. If people are spending a lot of time awake, they're not getting good quality sleep. Sometimes people are avoiding sleep because of that fear of having a nightmare. And that actually can make things worse. So restricting sleep can actually make that nightmare more likely. So really think about treatment when we start to see it create problems in functioning or just a lot of distress.
I got one more treatment question too, because I mean, I hope
Absolutely.
you can come back and have you define what's the difference between IRT, ERRT, and lucid dreaming, but and maybe this isn't a fair question, and tell me if it's not fair and we'll skip it. But it's, I often have heard the theory. So I'm a PTSD focused person. I teach prolonged exposure therapy here at CDP, do a lot of consultation for that. Yeah. And, Corinne does a lot of prolonged exposure therapy, also a trainer in cognitive processing therapy. So we've done a lot of trauma work. And I've heard kind of the theory that, especially with regards to trauma nightmares, that trauma nightmares perhaps may this theory that trauma nightmares are perhaps kind of the brain's way of trying to process this experience, right? Because we won't let ourselves process the experience while we're awake. So the brain's going to take advantage of the time where we're asleep and these experiences are coming up for processing, and our brain turns it into a story, and hence we have this nightmare. And kind of the extension of that theory sometimes is we really need to let your client have these nightmares. Stop, don't treat it necessarily, because this is one way the brain's trying to do its job of processing the trauma. But certainly there seems to be a line at which, that crosses into that's not helping, or maybe, at least withholding some helpful work. So, I mean, can you talk a little bit about that and kind of the appropriateness for treating nightmares separately when we're working on treating trauma too?
Absolutely. And so, I came into doing a lot of nightmare work because of my experience in PTSD. So, I'm a CPT trainer and consultant, a written exposure trainer and consultant, and I do PE. And what we often see is that if we do a good evidence-based treatment for trauma, that those trauma symptoms come down, they decrease. And sometimes nightmares decrease as part of that. And it's kind of like those nightmares were contained within the PTSD diagnosis. We do know from the research literature, though, that even with a good evidence-based treatment for PTSD, the two areas that tend to hang around in terms of symptoms are sleep disturbance and anger. And as part of that sleep disturbance, that's why sometimes after a course of CPT or PE or written exposure, I end up doing insomnia treatment,
Right.
CBTI. But sometimes we do nightmare treatment because it persists. Sometimes it takes on a life of its own. And so we have both PTSD and nightmare disorder co-occurring. So you ask kind of neurobiologically, should we let people have nightmares? And there's two pieces to that. One, unless somebody is hurting themselves or in danger of hurting themselves by acting out their nightmares, I don't encourage friends and family members to wake someone up. Now, they may wake up as part of the nightmare, and that's a different challenge, but we do want people to sleep through because our brain is trying to work some things out. But usually, if we're getting to the point where people are having those awakenings, then something is going wrong in that mechanism. And so, you know, we think about during REM sleep, which is where most dreams and nightmares happen, but they can happen throughout the night. In that part of sleep, our frontal lobe, that logical, rational part of our brain, our executive functioning, it's turned down. It's not working so hard anymore. And there are two other areas of our brain that are really, really active: the amygdala processing emotions, limbic system, and the visual cortex. And so, you know, if we are going to sleep and feeling really anxious, which often happens for trauma survivors for a lot of different reasons, then when it gets to that point of it's time to have dreams, our brain is going to pull for dreams, for content, for memories that match that distress. And that's often where it starts to bring in that trauma-related imagery. Because the frontal lobe is kind of offline for the best choice of words right now, it can't get any new learning. It can't make sense and sort out. It just has this distressing imagery coming up, this upsetting emotions coming up. And so it gets a little stuck. And we'll talk about the idea with patients of a nightmare script. And there's a neurobiological model of nightmares that looks at this, that talks about, you know, physiological factors, that talks about cognitive factors, and that our brain kind of gets stuck like a record and it keeps playing the same nightmare script over and over, and we can't get new information or new learning in to interrupt it. And so nightmares can almost become a habit. And we apply learning theory oftentimes here because the awakenings serve as an escape. And so it creates this feedback of more and more awakenings that allows the person to escape from the nightmare. And so it gets reinforced. So I think there is a piece of, you know, allowing somebody to continue to, you know, have some intrusion symptoms and doing PTSD treatment that may come down. But if we've gotten to the point where we're thinking about a nightmare disorder, again, it's causing those awakenings, it's causing that distress or impairment, then we really want to do some things to intervene to really alleviate suffering.
Right.
I really love that you gave both a very simple, straightforward answer to that question that I could like actually take to a patient and explain really, really easily. And then you also gave the really complicated answer that, of course, appeals to my sleep nerd side as well, but you covered it on both sides. Of course, that leads to the next question and maybe the most important question to our listeners: what do we do about it? And you mentioned already at the start a few different evidence-based treatments that are out there. Tell our listeners, what do we do with this, with
Let's
liver disorder?
dig into those. Number one, we ask. Because we know from research that most people don't think anything can be done about nightmares, so they won't bring it up with a healthcare provider. And a lot of healthcare providers don't know nightmare treatment exists, and so they don't know exactly what to do with patients. So number one, spread the word, ask about nightmares. And we want to do that in a really careful, thoughtful way. Because for some people, there are some other issues that come up when talking about nightmares. Sometimes there are cultural differences in whether it's okay to talk about dreams or nightmares or not. I actually did a talk about that this past July for the Society of Behavioral Sleep Medicine, looking at some of those cultural differences and religious differences across a lot of different populations. So ask, but ask in a thoughtful way. Language matters, and sometimes people will not say that they're having nightmares, but they will endorse dreams or bad dreams. Some people don't feel comfortable talking with a mental health professional about that. They maybe see it as more of a spiritual or religious problem, and so they may be more comfortable talking with a chaplain. And so having some of those connections to refer and to collaborate with interdisciplinarily can be really important. But asking about it and then providing some feedback that, we can actually make a difference in that. And there are three evidence-based treatments that I often recommend based on the clinical practice guidelines. But as a bonus, cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia sometimes can also be helpful here. We get people sleeping better, and that's probably something that's more readily available. So we have imagery rehearsal therapy and exposure, relaxation, and response prevention. So IRT and ERRT, we love an acronym. They had some of the same components, but ERRT adds exposure. And my co-author for the Nightmare and Sleep Disorder Toolkit, Dr. Michael Nadorf, and I have a fun professional back and forth about this because I think the exposure is needed in most cases. And he would very much say, just do IRT, try that first. People will respond, and you probably don't need the exposure. And I think we also work with different populations, and that may play a role. So imagery rehearsal therapy and ERRT have the same kind of themes of let's intervene in this nightmare cycle. So with nightmares, people have a nightmare, they wake up in distress. The next day they have difficulty functioning. They feel really anxious, usually about going to sleep, and then the cycle repeats. And so we can intervene at all of those points in the cycle to break it up. So relaxation is one of the first things that we teach people that, they can make a difference in that physiological arousal that they feel upon awakening. And some of the physiological arousal that goes with going to bed. Because remember, if we go to bed anxious, our brain is more likely to pull that imagery that is anxiety provoking.
When you say relaxation, what kinds of things are you talking about?
Great question. So some of that is as simple as learning some of the breathing techniques that we typically do as healthcare providers, diaphragmatic breathing, box breathing, but we usually add in some progressive muscle relaxation and oftentimes with guided imagery, because that'll set us up to do that next step of the imagery part of either of those treatments. And so that often creates this, bringing on the physiological relaxation response because we can't be anxious and relaxed at the same time. That is an off-on switch. So we use that technique. We also use imagery. And so part of that is scripting a dream that you would like to have. Whether that's something that's pleasant or neutral, just changing what we would dream about. And that sounds really simple, but we do it in a pretty purposeful way. Writing it out in a high level of detail, we have people practice that strategically in their day and before bed. And that repetition kind of creates that new path for our brain to take at night. And for a lot of people, for imagery rehearsal therapy, we see results. Sometimes people can do it in one session, but usually three or four, which is amazing to think about and really shocks some of the people that I work with who have had nightmares since Vietnam, right? We're 45, 50 years out, and I've had nightmares for that whole time. How can you fix that? There's some healthy skepticism that a treatment of, three sessions would actually work, but it's so powerful to see that change happen. Exposure, relaxation, and response prevention has that exposure component in it. So, as part of that, we do a lot of the same things as we do in IRT, but we go through and we have somebody expose themselves to the nightmare, the most common nightmare. We do that in session. We have them write it out in lots of detail to increase that sense of mastery that they have more control over the nightmare than it has control over them. And then we work together to find places that we can change that nightmare to make it neutral, to make it pleasant, to make it something that people actually want to dream about rather than this really aversive thing that mimics something that happened to them or brings on those same themes of loss of power, loss of safety, strong emotions. And so exposure, relaxation, response prevention usually is a little longer for most people. It's 5 or 6 sessions, but still relatively brief when we think
Yeah.
about a lot of our interventions. And, we really, in our book, The Nightmare and Sleep Disorder Toolkit, emphasize choice, and give people a roadmap that they can take the steps that they want to use. When we think about providers, we're often doing things with psychoeducation first, and we do a lot of
Right.
that in the book. And then here are the steps that we know are evidence-based to help people get better. And then we can talk about lucid dreaming therapy too, but I'll pause
Yeah.
there for a minute.
Well, number one, now I want to read the book. So I'm going to have to go pick up a copy, obviously, because this clearly appeals to me. The way you talked about that made me realize something that explains why I love nightmare treatment so much. And I think Kevin will be able to relate to this as well. There is so much overlap between what we do for PTSD treatment, which Kevin and I both
Yes.
focus on, and nightmare treatment. And so I feel myself wanting to say to our listeners, for those folks who have done trauma work before, have done evidence-based treatments, if you have even the slightest inclination to do nightmare treatment, please get training because you probably are already familiar with some components of
Yes.
it between psychoeducation and relaxation. And I know you didn't mention this, but in rewriting the dream script using those five themes that we're often familiar with as part of CPT, and the exposure piece that's relevant to PE, there's just so much overlap. And I think trauma treatment providers are just in this perfect place to learn this treatment as well.
I agree. That's how I came to it. I was
Yeah.
already doing those
Same.
evidence-based treatments for trauma, and it was really easy to scaffold these skills on top. And I think a lot of trauma providers find it easy to pick up and put in their toolkit. But I also see people that don't do trauma work. Maybe they have trauma-informed practices in healthcare, and this is something that they pick up kind of first, because it's brief. It's easy to fit into their practice, and maybe it's easier to learn or to start with than some of the EBPs for PTSD.
Yeah, we often say that treatment for sleep disorders is a gateway treatment. We say that for patients, but it could be true for providers as well.
I would agree with that.
Absolutely. And I think it sounds easier for our patients to say, yeah, I can do 3 to 6 sessions. And so getting them in and starting with that may create that pathway to do other treatment if it's needed.
So you've mentioned lucid dreaming, and before we get to that, I mean, you've talked about too some, great outcomes with IRT and ERRT. What does a good outcome look like? Are we talking about people being able to have a different dream experience because we've re-scripted it, or they're more easily able to come down, like de-escalate their physiological arousal after waking up from a nightmare, or having fewer nightmares? Like, what outcomes are we talking about?
Well, I think it varies from patient to patient because we're looking at what are your goals. For most people, though, I see a decrease at minimum in nightmare frequency and intensity. For a lot of people, they will see those nightmares just kind of fade away, and they may not even report having the new dream if we've created the new dream. But that's actually a good thing because the way our brain works and is supposed to work, we're not really supposed to recall the content of our dreams or our nightmares. That would get real confusing real fast, right? Did I have a fight with my loved one last night? Did I have a car wreck last night? Right? No, we don't want those things necessarily to bleed over into our day. So for most people, they'll come back in and they'll kind of go like, I didn't have any dreams or nightmares. What does that mean? And I was like, that's
Yay.
good. That
Right.
means things are working. For others, sometimes it's a slower progression. And so they'll start in the middle of treatment, we'll see kind of this change where they're like, I kind of have like a hybrid. Like, what does that mean? Like, now am I going to have to do something else? And it's kind of, well, that's like, it's working. It's starting to slowly make that change in your nightmare scripts. And that's a good thing. And so
Yeah.
sometimes people will start to just say, it wasn't as strong, or it wasn't, I only had one this week. And it was kind of like, we do some rating. We do some sleep diaries with nightmare diaries to kind of keep track because we love to measure these things.
Data
How do we know
collection,
if it's
yep.
better or not if we don't measure it? So for a lot of people, one of the big consistent outcomes is just improvement in sleep. Right, because they're not waking up to have to deal with all this, so they're getting more continuity in their sleep. The quality is often improved. So there can be a couple of different target outcomes that happen. But for most people, we see sleep improvement, and at minimum, we see decrease in frequency and intensity. But for a lot of people, there's remission of the nightmare.
Which is so fantastic, right? And like that's of course what the goal is. And the reason I asked that before we went to lucid dreaming is because I wonder if there's differences. I mean, certainly the procedures seem like they're going to be different, although I'm holding my breath anxiously waiting to hear about lucid dreaming therapy. And maybe the outcomes, maybe they're similar, but maybe there's some differences there too. But could you tell us about lucid dreaming?
Absolutely. So, lucid dreaming is something that a lot of people have had experience with. Lucid dreaming means that I recognize in a dream that I am dreaming. For some people, that's more frequent. They lucid dream a good bit, and they recognize that they're dreaming, or sometimes they can even change the content of their dreams. And so we build on that, but it's also a skill. So if you've never had that experience, it's also something that can be taught. And we do that through a couple of different techniques, but we teach people to essentially recognize that they're dreaming while they're dreaming. And then we work on building in additional skills to help them change the content of their dream. So they kind of recognize this is a nightmare because X, Y, or Z. And then we usually have practiced, much like in the rescription, a way to change that, or even to kind of just come out of the dream entirely. And so it's one that I had some healthy skepticism about when I first learned about, because I was like, are you sure about this? But there's research to support it. So let me experiment, let me test it out. And I've seen some good outcomes. It's not one that I do as often. Patients don't pick it as often for whatever reason, but it's a good one to have on the menu because for some people, they know like that is the one. People usually feel really strongly about which one they want to approach. And if they want lucid dreaming, we go for it. And again, three, four sessions, and we really see that decrease in severity. But sometimes people will also have the same experience if they don't have to continue to kind of recognize because they stop having that nightmare. So it's a really interesting technique and a really good one to have in the toolkit.
That one's kind of new to me, so I'm interested in learning more about that
Yeah,
one
same.
too. Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about our theme for this season, or the theme for this season, which, as our listeners know, with season 7 of Practical for Your Practice, we are talking or asking our guests to talk about what are the 7 sins of evidence-based practice that you've seen. And, to make that a little bit more approachable, let me say, what we're really asking about is what are some common errors or some issues that you've seen in how providers, including yourself maybe, have implemented EBPs in the past? Where do people tend to get stuck, or misstep when it comes to nightmare treatment? And importantly, what can we do about that if we notice that?
Absolutely. So I'm going to go back to the beginning. Good evidence-based practice starts with assessment and continues with assessment. And then we do some more assessment. And so one thing we haven't talked about yet today is the comorbidity that we see in nightmares with some of the other sleep disorders. And so sometimes I'll have people come in and they'll say, I'm having nightmares. The referral says they're having nightmares. And then we talk about it. And as part of my assessment, I'll say, okay, so tell me more about the content. Well, I don't remember any of the content. Well, then we're not having, what makes you think you're having a nightmare? And they'll talk about the physiological symptoms. They'll talk about gasping for air, feeling anxious. And so sometimes we're looking at obstructive sleep apnea instead, or sometimes there's another sleep disorder that's happening. And so assessment is really, really important. We can do nightmare treatment, but that's not going to fix the obstructive breathing issue. We can sometimes see disruptions in sleep for other reasons, and we can do CBTI, and that might help with nightmare treatment, and nightmare treatment might help with insomnia. But I think continuous assessment is important, one, to make sure that we're working within the scope of our practice as behavioral providers, therapists, and behavioral sleep specialists, because there are certain things that we're not going to treat, and we need to make those referrals for. REM sleep behavior disorder is another condition that shows up sometimes in individuals, and especially seems to show up in veterans and service members with nightmares. And this is a sleep condition where people will act out their dreams and nightmares, oftentimes in a way that causes unintentional injury to themselves or their bed partners. And that actually, the nightmare content in that responds to these nightmare treatments, but there are some other pieces that need to happen. And so we don't want to miss anything along this pathway. So good assessment is important at the start for differential diagnosis, but also we want to know, are we actually making progress? And so I can remember I didn't sleep well, or I can remember that I had a lot of nightmares, but if we don't quantify it or we don't look at it, then how do we know when we're making progress and when it's time to end treatment? So I think I do a lot of consultation with providers from lots of different backgrounds, and assessment comes up a lot as a skill that needs some reinforcement and feeding into case conceptualization. And then that continued assessment is one of the things that I see as a seven deadly sin of EBP practice.
Totally agree with you. I think Corinne would agree with me too. Like whenever we've done consultation for PTSD, or I think Corinne's consultation with sleep as well. It's one of the things we foot stomp all the time is this has got to start with good assessment. We've got to know what we're working with. And like you said, ongoing assessment. It's not an event, it's a process. It's throughout that whole treatment relationship.
Yeah, I think we're gonna continue to keep a running list of the seven sins that we collect. That was a good one,
I like
assessment.
it a
That,
lot.
so that, so the sin is not doing the assessment.
Not doing the assessment, not doing continuous assessment.
This has been such a fantastic discussion. I think I am now officially a sleep nerd. And
We
especially with
finally did
you
it.
got
We
it,
finally
you
crossed
pulled
the
me over the
line.
line. And especially because of a lot of that overlap, like we talked about with, trauma work too. And diagnoses there. So I just wanted to, at the end of every one of our episodes, Dr. Worley, as you probably have noticed too, we're going to ask our guests to, tell us what are a couple of actionable intel items? What are some things that our listeners can take with them after listening to the episode and start to apply like right now that, can improve their work? And I heard a couple already, so let me throw these out there and you can confirm or deny them. But number one is just ask the question, right? Like ask whether our clients are experiencing nightmares. Are they distressing? Are they causing disruptions in functioning? But then number two is, maybe seems obvious, like, but get training in IRT, ERRT, or lucid dreaming, or all of the above, and let those tools be in your toolbox. Anything, would you disagree with that or add things or edit how I said it?
I agree. Ask the question, number one. Number two, get training or have a good referral source. We can't all be a one-stop shop for all of our patient challenges or issues. And some people, I don't know who, some people I hear don't want to do sleep treatment.
Who are those people?
Or maybe they don't have access. I mean, that is one of the challenges that I see. And one of the reasons why, I have a master's degree in public health. And so I think about how do we scale these interventions for the individual to all the people that need them. And that was part of the impetus for the book. There are not enough behavioral sleep medicine providers to go around. There aren't enough people yet trained in this work. And so, I wanted, there are also people who don't want to see a behavioral sleep medicine provider. And so what do we do for them? That's why I wanted to have a patient-facing book that would give people tools to help address their sleep complaints for family members, or loved ones, and for providers. There are some really good resources out there to help with training. CBT for nightmares.org is a website that takes you through this training course. So there are some resources out there, but I think, make sure that you're asking the question and that you're figuring out how to get your patient evidence-based care for this condition.
Absolutely. Can you tell us again the title of your book and the authors, just so our folks that may be interested in looking that up, reading it, obtaining a copy, can find it?
Absolutely. So you can it comes out on October 1st, but I don't know when this is debuting, but it's available for pre-order now. And it's with New Harbinger Press. Dr. Courtney Worley and Dr. Michael Nadorf are the authors, and it is called The Nightmare and Sleep Disorder Toolkit. And so it uses the AASM criteria for treating nightmares and sleep problems in adults.
That's so cool. And to clarify, you said this is more for patients than providers, or would both benefit from reading it?
We wrote it so that both would benefit
Oh,
from
very
it.
great.
So it is something that is accessible for patients who want to do this work on their own or who maybe want to try before they talk to a provider, but it also has practical tools for providers who want to implement the treatments with their patients.
Excellent. Well, we will definitely put that title in the show notes. And I also want to make sure that we'll include the research study that you mentioned as well. So we'll get that information from you after we wrap up, and we'll make sure that our listeners have access to that as well. Because if you
Wonderful.
can convince Kevin to be a sleep nerd, I'm guessing that you've probably piqued the interest of many of our listeners.
I'll throw out there too. We do have some upcoming training here at CDP this coming year, where we're going to be offering training workshops, a one-day training workshop in CBT for nightmares with Dr. Joanne Davis and Dr. Courtney Bolstad. So there's some other opportunities too. If this has whetted your appetite and you're excited and interested, or you can develop those skills more too.
Well, I think we've got another great episode in the books. Thank you so much, Dr.
Thank
Worley,
you.
for joining us. I learned about lucid dreaming, so I'm excited. I learned something today that I didn't know before. Kevin,
I
we
have a
may
new
do
hat that I love, so yeah.
So thank you so much for joining us. It's really been a pleasure to talk
Thank you
with you
so
today.
much.
I really appreciate it. It was lovely to talk with you all.
And thanks to our listeners for checking in. We hope that you'll continue to listen to the rest of our season and catch up on all of the seven sins of
Right.
EPPs. Until then, don't forget to stay curious.
And mind your EPPs.
Bye, everybody.
Remember, we love hearing from our listeners, so leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send us an email. Both can be found in our show notes. Our theme music is Failed Attempts by Nitro, and our administrative assistant is Bree Mercer.
Thanks for listening to Practical for Your Practice.
If you like what you're hearing, please feel free to follow us, rate this episode, and share it with others.
Until next time.